The Noah story is a powerful reminder of our creatureliness. With all the extreme weather we've experienced around the world, we're forced to face the possibility that we imperfect mortals may have contributed much of the disruption and harm that climate change can cause. For Unitarian Universalists, the flood story reminds us of our obligation to be stewards of this world that we have been given. It asks, what does a healthy, whole planet contain? Who gets to ride the ark? It asks, what would our world look, feel, and be like today if God had not insisted that our fellow animals join us on that ship? This isn't as silly a question as it may sound. At the Natural History Museum in Chicago, you can walk through exhibit after exhibit. There are five in all. Each contains several rooms full of creatures that ate, bathed, gave birth, and died long before our mammalian ancestors scooted up a tree or scooted down one to the savannah. Our current epoch, scientists say, is the beginning of a sixth extinction, the fifth being the one that killed the most recent dinosaurs. They are concerned about the large number of species that are dying out. One reason they offer for why this die-out may be happening is the invention of farming, which happened to be Noah's post-flood invention. According to this thought, farming meant that humans did not have to interact with other species as equals, and so could manipulate animals for their own use. And we view and treat animals very differently today, don't we, than our ancestors did. Witness the animal industrial complex, the huge proliferation of pets and pet factories that have sprung up in the last 50 years. Even in the early days of agriculture, there was probably a greater sense of interdependence and mutual respect shown to animals, whether in farming or hunting communities. But today I want to introduce you, whether you're an animal person or not, to a reptile, because we are learning lessons all the time, after all. How many of you have ever touched a lizard? Most of you. Wonderful. My son had an iguana, so we had a lizard living with us for a number of years. The iguana's name was Tokage, and we got the lizard when my son turned 9. He had fur allergies, so this was a good alternative. This iguana liked to sit in my son's lap, or better still, on top of his head. You think Foxtrot made it up? No, that's actually what they like to do. I want to talk to you about lizards this morning because if you cup your hand over the back of your skull, right at the top of your spine, where your spine and skull meet, those two little bumps, well, most of us have two, maybe you have three, I don't know. You are cupping your reptile brain. What a reptile is and does, and to the degree that we can use this term, thinks, is here, in us. This is where our basic survival responses emanate from. Fight or flight, sleep or eat, look or turn away. Tokage often sat on my son's head while he did his homework. My son, that is, did the homework. Why? The iguana felt very safe up there. My son was so quiet and still while he was doing his homework that he came to resemble a fairly warm tree. My son, especially during his very tough middle school years, appreciated company. Sitting still for a long time while doing his homework was boring, but having a lizard on your head makes it a little bit more interesting. My son sat so still so often that Toka made himself at home, at one with him. So the first lesson we learned from sharing our lives with a lizard was that sitting still is an important part of gaining trust. It is a building block for establishing a relationship that in our case lasted for 14 years. And it was a true relationship because it was built on very simple things: trust, warmth, and mutual respect. Now, Toka was not really good for much of anything, economically speaking. He was demanding, in fact, of a lot of care. We had to feed, water, and groom him. He had very sharp, long claws, hence the mutual respect. His tail also operates like a bullwhip, just in case you ever meet an iguana in the wild. Beware those two things. We had to bathe him and to clean his cage. Because he lived with us in chilly New England and not in the warm tropics, which is his native land, he needed us to keep him warm and hydrated, to keep the air moist. And like any being, we soon learned to engage in the world. He loved being out of his tank and would roam the living room in the wintertime. He would wander into my daughter's room to visit the cockatiel that lived there, much to the cockatiel's dismay. In the summer, he'd have total freedom of a screened-in porch, sunbathing on the chair rail that went around the inside, or climbing up the screen to look into the treetops to see what he could see there. He was fascinated by birds and squirrels and insects buzzing by. But most of all, he loved the warmth. Toka basking in the warmth, summer or winter, was a beautiful thing. His gorgeous emerald green and brown diamond-spotted body stretched out on the carpet, his dancer's legs elegantly out to either side, and long arms with their delicate fingers to each side as well. He breathed peace and happiness. He was not fighting or fleeing, just being, just breathing. We enjoyed watching him, and we enjoyed creating a warm and peaceful place for him. And he inspired us to just breathe, just be in the warmth of each other. All beings need to feel safe. This is especially important when we are growing, when we're changing, which we're hopefully doing fairly often. I wonder how many of us have witnessed a bird in its molt when it sheds its old feathers and starts to grow. One person, just one. It's a couple. Yep. How many of you have ever seen a snake skin on the side of the road or in the... Yeah, lots. Okay. So birds and snakes, they shed things. Feathers, scales, skin. We shed things too, of course. Our skin cells is the best analogy. The moment you're born, you know, you start to shed skin cells. Say that five times fast. Shed skin cells. Those of us who are 49 or over, we're on at least our seventh molt. I mean skin. Lizards, like snakes, get a new skin as they grow, of course. If they live in a house, they need help shedding because in the wild, they would use rocks and tree bark or branches, encounters with natural things, to help them shed those dead cells. Our iguana, however, would sit in my son's lap again and let him patiently remove skin that had become gray and flaky. couple of times a year. A few times, my son was able to peel the skin so carefully that he came down at breakfast time with a complete iguana arm, fingers, wrist, all the way down to the elbow, in these shadowy, lovely cells of skin. Beneath this skin was a soft, new, brilliant chartreuse skin. Having your feathers fall out or your skin come off, having tender skin or new tender feathers exposed to the air and light and sharp branches can make an animal feel vulnerable. They can be more easily hurt if they can't fly, which they can't at some points of their molting, or when their skin is very, very soft. In the wild, both reptiles and birds become nervous and hide during these times of transition. What I learned from our friend Toka is that when I'm growing, when I'm shedding old habits or grudges or worries, that's exactly how I feel. And that's exactly when I need friends and family's compassion and sometimes help. Change can be terrifying, enough to prevent some of us from even trying something new. We need others to help us. Recently, a new friend confessed that she'd hit a wall in her discernment of what to do following getting her law degree. She had tried to go into business for herself, but found it wasn't the area of law she chose wasn't fulfilling. So she was confused and not a little embarrassed. I connected her with a retiree, another friend who'd just gone off to become a life coach. And my friend is relieved to have help peeling some of the preconceptions about what she was meant to do or thought she should be doing in the world. Our reptile brothers and sisters know some things we need to be reminded of from time to time. We're similar in more ways than we would like to imagine. The old, old story gives Noah and his family huge credit for listening to Yahweh's warning about the changes to come and about our sacred responsibility for our fellow animals. As long as there have been Homo sapiens, we have watched our fellow animals and we have learned from them. Here, on the verge of the sixth extinction, we need to consider how losing the company of other creatures is changing our inner world, our understanding of who we are, who we could become, and how we operate within the context of one planet. We need to be reminded of what this means, this possible extinction of other creatures means for our collective future. May our thoughts, words, and deeds give life and light to all beings that share this wonderful world with us. And now our last hymn, which you probably will know when you see it, is based on a prayer by St. Francis of Assisi, the founder of the Franciscan Order, and a lover of all creatures. So please rise and join me in singing hymn 203, All Creatures of the Earth and Sky.